Hi, and welcome to the next edition of the New Academy Series podcast. I'm Dave Morris.
And I'm Mary Lucille Hayes.
And today we have two guests with us. We have a grad TA and grad student in our writing studies, sorry, in the Center for Writing Studies, and that's Andy Bowman. He was involved in the GEO strike, and we're going to be talking to him about that. And we have Sean Gilmore, senior lecturer in English, who has been the NTFC president. Guys, good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Great to be here.
Okay, so we want to get started by just talking briefly about the results of the GEO strike and a little bit about how it went. So it took 2 weeks, which was a surprisingly long time. But Andy, what are some of the things that you think are most important that the new GEO contract secured through that strike?
Well, obviously, when we went out on strike, one of the major issues we were always discussing was the importance of protecting guaranteed tuition waivers for any member of the GEO or anyone on this campus who does bargaining unit work. So the work of TAs and GAs should require a tuition waiver. And instead of that being in a separate side letter, we now have that language guaranteed in the contract.
Woohoo! I know.
Now, that was a big win for us.
Can you explain a little bit to our listeners, about why is that an important difference, the side letter versus the contract?
Well, when something is in a side letter, it has to be re-bargained every bargaining cycle. And the administration can make an argument that that part of the agreement has quote-unquote sunset, so that it is no longer viable, while all of the other provisions that are included in the body of the contract, with some slight exceptions, remain in effect while we're still bargaining that next contract. In general, too, the administration can say that it, one of their top tactics this time was to say that the tuition waivers were a permissive subject of bargaining, so their argument was it was something that they could choose to bargain about instead of something that, as a part of our wage package that GEO has always defended, that tuition waivers are compensation, they must bargain it with us.
So mandatory subjects of bargaining tend to be things like salary and benefits, and so the debate was whether tuition waivers were within that. Yeah. And that's a tactic we encountered in NTFC negotiations too, right, Sean?
Right. Especially because we don't have a fixed set of wage packages that are as recognizable. So there's also these borderline questions of what actually constitutes wages and benefits, mm-hmm. and what about things that we would consider to be compensation, but might not fit a traditional model if you were, say, a wage laborer. Though pretty successfully, most academic unions are able to get things like tuition waivers considered mandatory subjects because obviously they have a compensatory value.
Right. And for those who are maybe new to campus or new to paying attention to bargaining, to labor bargaining, collective bargaining on campus, every single GEO contract negotiation cycle, they pull out, the admin side tends to pull out this argument that tuition waivers are not a mandatory subject of bargaining and they're just going to politely decline mm-hmm. bargaining about them at all. And I don't think that's ever succeeded as long as I've been here.
Thus far in my experience, I've been here a decent amount of time, it usually has come up and then been either quickly dismissed or forcibly dismissed by something like
right.
a strike.
Right. So. Very good. So, Andy, tell us a little bit about your experiences during the strike. I think you were with the group who occupied the president's office. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that was how I ended my strike. But I started it off walking picket lines on the English building. I was one of the coordinators of the picket lines on the English building. Each of the buildings we were picketing had somebody just walking around and making sure that all of the picket lines stayed strong, had about the same number of people. So that was probably my favorite experience during the strike because of getting to see all of my colleagues, and not just members of the GEO, but my friends in NTFC and many like members of the community who all came out to defend my rights. That was a really, really cool experience. And then later on, when after week one of the strike, we came back to, there was a bargaining session on Sunday, and the administration basically said, we're still not going to move, and we politely informed them that all of those things we said we were out on strike for had not changed in the week, and that we would continue, we would stay out on the picket lines until we secured a contract that was fair for our members. Unfortunately, that required some escalation.
Yeah. Somebody who's not particularly sympathetic to the GEO told me, well, the GEO walked away from the table. And I said, Well, first of all, you can only do that during the strike. But secondly, I think that's because the admin side hadn't moved in any way. So this is one of the sort of terrifying things about being on strike is that at that point, you are pushed to such a crisis that things become so high stakes that what might seem like a reasonable bargaining stance is no longer a reasonable bargaining stance.
Right.
No, like, a strike it's not a symbol. It is people saying, we are walking off our jobs, we are not going to do the things we're paid for, and we are willing to give up we're willing to give up the wages and benefits because we need better. Like, this is the way we fight to secure the wages, the benefits, and the package that makes doing this job economically sustainable. Like,
right.
our working conditions or our students' learning conditions, mm-hmm. if we can't secure the protections we need, we can't do the work of being the educators at this university.
Yeah. Speaking of students, I'm curious about, did you get support from your students? Did you see any of them during the strike? My students were minimally affected because I just had to move my class as a member of the NTFC. I couldn't strike with you guys. And my students were fine with it. I talked to them a lot about it, and they seemed pretty supportive, at least the ones who had stuff to say. So I'm wondering what kind of reaction you got from your students.
Right before we went on strike, I told my students, like, after class ends, I'm willing to stay behind and answer any questions you might have. I'm sure you've heard issues about strike. And one thing that was really, heartening to see was almost up my entire class remained behind and asked, like, so what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And I explained some of the things that the GEO was fighting for, like protections for our wages and tuition waivers. And, like, particularly the tuition waiver argument can be kind of technical, but my students got it. And that was, like, as a teacher of argumentation, my students getting that argument was something that was, again, heartening. Yeah, again, heartening for me. And then while I was actually on strike, I did see a couple of my own students walking by saying supportive things or joining picket lines. But one of the particularly nice things about the GEO strike was almost all of the people handing out flyers for us were fellow undergrads who decided that they wanted to support our strike, that they wanted their teachers to have the things they needed to do.
One of the things I enjoyed this time walking the picket line was one of the things people did was make a real effort to introduce themselves to the people around them. And there were people from all over campus. There were engineering students and sciences students and even students from library sciences who really aren't allowed to strike because they're what's called pre-professional graduate assistant, which is a bunch of technical stuff that says that they can't do anything. But I really enjoyed that. Watching that solidarity sort of emerge from a variety of places, because there's sort of either a thoughtful or instinctive sense that we do have all of these interests in common, that very much that, especially between NTTs and TAs, that one side's gain is the other side's gain too. And I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind, because there have been times when those two groups, especially within this department, have been actively played off each other. And so it was really nice for me to see.
Yeah, something that I think has actually become a lot clearer over the last few years is the both overlap of interest and on a practical level, the overlap of actual work, meaning NTTs and TAs and GAs and RAs, depending on how they're represented, often are doing either very similar or the actual same work, just at different amounts.
Right.
And that's true in many departments, or they have some intersecting levels of work, meaning a set of TAs actually works for a non-tenure-track faculty member who does the lecture, right? And therefore, they are all locked together in that system. Now, one of the things we've noticed in departments like this one, but also across campus, is that a lot of graduate work carries over either directly or indirectly. So we have some graduate students who become non-tenure-track faculty, or they come here from other places just having been graduate students.
Right.
And those are not dissimilar experiences in most places. And it is true that if you look at it as two distinct communities with mutually separable interests, you could play them off each other, and various administrators have tried to do so, intentionally or not, over the years. But it has become a lot tighter over the last few years, especially because of the need to strike. especially because on all of the campuses in the system, there's been a series of strikes of faculty and now graduate students rolled in. That has really, I think, clarified those bonds in a lot of ways.
No, like one of the things I found really interesting during the strike, and I just want to echo what Dave said about the solidarity, was in many ways the administration works to divide the various constituencies here on this campus, whether it's between non-tenure track faculty and graduate students, whether it's between people who study humanities disciplines or those who are in the hard sciences, whether it's faculty being put against their students, or even at one point the provost sent out a manual to executive officers about and students about how to deal with the strike, and in that manual it suggested to undergrads to call campus police if they felt uncomfortable about during the strike. Like, so this administration is very keen to find ways to divide constituencies that in many ways share very similar interests, or doing very similar work. So I think the greatest, like, or one of the greatest things about the strike for me was to see all of that work fail.
Yeah. It's always been fascinating to me how they try to, once they've sort of said that there's an interest division, how they've attempted to redraw. And I'm talking here, you know, the administration is a very, very, very large apparatus that certainly has a lot of people in it with a lot of different interests and a lot of different positions. But so I'm talking here about sort of people who work in the the provost and people who work directly under him, and certainly Robin Kaler and all of the sort of public relations people. But they're attempting to say that there's administrative positions, whether we're talking about unit executive officers or provosts, are somehow sort of interest neutral. And they're there simply to protect the interests of undergraduates. Why undergraduates are separate from graduate students, from NTTs, from faculty, I'll never 100% understand how you can make that separation. But I wonder how can we redraw the lines even further is what I'm always thinking about, because you know, and obviously this is impossible during a strike when we've gotten to this kind of situation. But away from crisis, which we're told we're in all the time, sure. Away from crisis, are there ways to rhetorically, materially redraw these lines, not just with grad students and TAs, but we can bring undergrads, we can bring various partially administrative units, which I would describe Andy and me, these sort of partially administrative units into some kind of vision of what we're doing here and how.
So this is one of those things I think a lot about because I wear a lot of hats for the department. I serve on the Senate and I chair a Senate committee, and our academic Senate, unlike some other universities' academic Senates, is comprised of tenure track and non-tenure track faculty and graduate students and undergraduate students and academic professionals, although in very odd proportions sometimes. That's an issue that is long known but is there. One of the things that the idea of our system at the University of Illinois is based around is this idea of shared governance that is actually shared across the levels. Mm-hmm. The undergraduate student government is supposed to have a functional role in advising the chancellor on how to run the university. That's a thing they're supposed to do. Whether or not that happens all the way through, for example, they've advised the chancellor to remove our mascot, the chief, and that, of course, has not completely happened yet, so we're still 20 years down that path. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I think is worth stressing at all the levels, especially when we're outside of crisis, but sometimes even when we're in it, is that the way that is supposed to be structured has to actually be played into by all the players.
Right.
Meaning you can't just end up with two sides yelling at each other over a strike as the only time we actually adjudicate the balance. We actually have to play it out all the time.
Yes.
And it's not perfect. Like, I'm not going to say that we have made structures that are perfect for this, but we need a system of leadership that actually is willing to meet about issues outside of crisis moments, right? We need systems that are both locally, say at the unit level, like a department, but also broadly at, say, the campus level, willing to actually bring in and take as real voices the constituencies. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's easy to say, you know, we should have critical conversations about these things, and we'll do those 4 months from now.
Which faculty, is, yeah.
Exactly. But one of the things that is important is not pretending that each constituency can actually just be satisfied one at a time.
Right.
Right? We are, in fact, all together in various ways. And I have tried to spend a lot of my time, especially connecting the union stuff and the department service stuff, to try to advance those causes, because some things are not solved by collective bargaining agreements. They
right.
just aren't. And some things are way to the side of labor issues, even though they touch on, say, academic environment issues,
mm-hmm.
or the general impact of, say, the growth of some fields over the growth of others, or where we throw money on the campus versus where we throw money up.
Budgeting models.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those things are not quite collective bargaining issues, and yet somehow they're going to come back to it eventually. And if we don't talk about that stuff as we're doing them, we're all shocked and surprised when that's what we've done to ourselves.
That's the thing. I feel like we are in a permanent state of shock. And I believe that's somewhat deliberate, that nobody pays. If I had to hear one more opinion from a person about the strike who had paid zero attention to bargaining the entire time, who had no idea how it worked, I was going to tear my hair out. I was so tired of hearing that. It's like, oh, now you've got opinions
mm-hmm.
about how the GEO
strong
and the administration
side? Firm
yeah.
opinions.
Yeah. I mean, damn. God, this makes me mad. And there's this weird kind of isolation, not only among constituencies, but among individuals, of people just sort of not paying attention
mm-hmm.
and then getting mad. We're always reacting instead of planning for a future, or sort of acting or trying to actively figure out what's, I guess, active is the word here. Yeah, and this bothers me so much. And what's strange to me is it was in GEO that I learned to pay attention to anything
mm-hmm.
structural.
Yep.
It was, for those who don't know, I was co-president of GEO many, 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 many years ago,
mm-hmm.
05, 06. But this is the place that I learned to pay attention to these things. But is it possible for people to learn to pay attention to these things without having to go on strike?
I mean, that's a good question.
Andy, how did you
honest.
Pick up on this stuff?
Well, actually, I did not learn about this when I went on strike. I learned about it when the NTSC had to go on the strike that won their first contract. My first semester here on campus was the semester, or no, my second semester here on campus.
So it's April and May.
It was in the spring, so
yep.
it was my set. That first year blurs together a bit. Any
yes.
of you who attended grad school, I'm sure will remember.
Yeah.
So that my second semester here on campus, I was teaching in the Henry Administration Building, and that was one of the buildings that NTSC was closing down and when they went to picket to when they went on a ULP strike to help win their first contract. And I was talked to by people I worked with in the department, other graduate employees, NTTs that I knew that I had good relationships with from having gone to trainings together or seeing each other at events and potlucks. And they told me, like, this is what we're struggling for, and this is how you can help me. It seemed crazy to do anything else, so I moved my class and joined them on picket lines, and that was when, and seeing NTFC win that contract and how they did it, like, by bringing people together, by helping create these bottom-up structures of power,
mm-hmm.
like, that was when I was like, okay, I want to do this too.
And ironically, I think NTFC's strike was directly descended from GEO's
oh, yeah,
2009
no,
strike,
I think
without
there is
a doubt.
There is a very clear line that GEO sort of broke this open in 2009 with its first strike,
mm-hmm.
and then there's been a series of them, one almost every year on the three campuses of the system.
Yeah.
So in the intervening years, all three faculty unions on all three campuses have gone on strike for their first contracts. SEIU in, I think, 2013 had a large strike here. I believe that's 2013.
Hmm.
Almost positive that's true. And it's clear that is the model we're currently having to deal with, which is each of the larger or more contentious bargaining cycles has this pattern to it now.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it has to be that way. For example, the UIC faculty union settled its second contract without much of a fuss.
Yeah.
Right, and so it's possible to fix the system a little bit one thing at a time, but it's certainly, since the 2009 strike, been a pattern that we've settled into. Mm-hmm. And I think you raise a good question, and it is one about how people become aware of the ways of thinking about this stuff. One thing I noticed, because I've watched a lot of new people come in different kinds of roles over the years, is that it's very easy to come into a big state school and find a niche and stay in the niche. And if that niche is tenure-track faculty, then you tend to stay with your tenure-track faculty, and they have a different set of interests, you think, than, say, your niche being grad students or your niche being the particular corner of being an undergrad. But one thing that unions do is they bring people across disciplines and fields together because they are shared by a legal bond, which is their collective bargaining interests. But then, of course, they actually have to talk to each other about how to do the thing of being a union, which is not something we compel a lot of other places. Now, it is always surprising to me that those niche ways of looking at things aren't broken up by things like department solidarity as much as they could be.
Right.
Seems like some departments perhaps are a little more together, perhaps because of size or rise in status. You know, if you're over in something like engineering or business these days, I'm sure you feel a little bit more connected just because you're talked about more. Mm-hmm. But it does strike me that the unit each person is attached to often should probably be a similar kind of body to something like a union, logically.
Yeah.
Right. Regardless of how you got there, once you're there, the thing all has to work and you're part of it. And I would think we'd all kind of look at it that way, and I try to look at it that way, but that doesn't always strike me as the case.
Well, and I think where we go from here and some of the things that the strike taught us is instead of like thinking about, okay, this is how we look at things, this is a successful model, how do we influence people, how do we persuade people to look at things that way? Like, as a teacher and scholar of rhetoric, like, I think a lot about how can we... we just had a very successful strike. This was, and through a model of organizing and build it and top down building of power, or a bottom up building of power and solidarity, how can we spread this model and how can we make it work sustainably, not just when we're on strike, but in non bargaining years? Like, that's something that I've been thinking a lot about. And part of that is, in my role in the GEO, I'm one of the co-chairs of the Stewards Council, which is the body that organizes membership. So, recruits members, encourages them to join the union, helps connect them with union services. Mm-hmm. So, now that we've won this strike, I want to look a little bit more outward and think, how can we think about some of these organizing models of coming together and going beyond, like, in places like at the department level and then at the macro level with bringing together constituencies of faculty and NTTs and graduate mm-hmm. students.
Undergraduates.
And
undergraduates.
One thing I have been talking about a lot in my classes, I teach composition mostly freshmen, and especially in the context of teaching the research paper, I talk to them a lot about the academic community. And most of them like haven't really thought about that. You know, I'm here to get my degree. I'm here to study and learn stuff so I can get a job. But they don't think of themselves as a piece of the academic community. And I think that's really important. And that's, you know, beyond bargaining and whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a thing to remember that we're all a part of and how to make people feel welcome to that, especially my undergraduate students, I guess.
Right, to teach them and each other about what does it mean to be part of that community, though. So what are some of the things that show that we have these commitments to each other? You know, I was trying to explain this to somebody a couple of weeks ago. I don't come from a union background growing up, but one of the things that made GEO so appealing was when I talked to people in the GEO about my experience as a grad student, especially my material experience, especially how damn much healthcare cost, mm-hmm. nobody told me that I was wrong. Like, and nobody also, you know, nobody said, oh yeah, man, that sucks. what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, which was the biggest sort of response I got. You know, people in GEO tended to say, you're right, given what we are being asked to do, mm-hmm. that's wrong. That doesn't work. What can we do to try to change that? And nobody promised me that it could be done the next day. And nobody promised me that anything was going to be perfect or anything was going to be immediate or suddenly that all of a sudden the health insurance would suddenly cover people's chronic conditions. I always said I hope our next genius people don't have asthma, because that pretty much disqualifies you from being a grad student. But anyway, you know, people in GEO said, oh yeah, you know, this is a real thing. All of these things are tied together. They are not separate. They are not matters of simply finishing grad school faster. It would be nice if we could. But, you know, they're not simply matters of finishing grad school faster, or of keeping your head down, or of taking on a million extra jobs yourself. These are things that matter, and these are things that we can talk about and do things about.
And everything that we were asking for during our bargaining, and you guys were asking for it, are things that would nurture the whole academic community.
Yeah, one concern I always have about talking about things through a union lens is it often makes things, because the mandatory subjects are fairly commercial in their logic, right? They're about wages and compensation and benefits, right? It often makes it sound as though this is a question of base salaries and some health insurance,
right,
when in fact it's almost always a question of actual working and thus teaching and research conditions. It's almost always a question of how to support the lives of the people that you're trying to put in those positions, because in fact they make the rest of the system work, right? But the way it has to be translated to, say, how you talk about it to the media, or when you write down a list of what's been gained in a contract, often has to be itemized along, you know, fairly traditional bargaining lines.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we tried to stress when we were on strike a couple of years ago, and we used the slogan education first, because in part the thing we discovered that I didn't even know when I took over as president of the union, when we formed the union, is that half of the people in the union had been with the university for 10 years or more, mm-hmm. that we had this huge swath of people who were designated as excellent teachers, that we had all these research awards and grants that had gone to all these members that we didn't really know anything about, because they had never been put together as part of the educational pattern that non-tenure track faculty participate in, right? Just no one puts that pattern together, in part because it's all atomized, right? Each unit may know that it has these two great scholars and these three great teachers, but nobody outside that unit's ever heard of that. And so we worked really hard to try to promote that. You guys are working to promote that. That's part of the deal now, I think, is that we have to be aware of how to explain what we're actually talking about, not just as a way to grab a little bit of money while the iron is hot, but because...
Or to look for a better job.
Or look for a better job, or to try to parlay our anger into some pecuniary gain, which is definitely a thing people say about unions, in part, which seems silly to me, but they say it. But in fact, because we're securing part of the educational apparatus itself, and thus the community part of it.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we're all here for. Most of us could actually go find a different job somewhere else, if that's what we chose to do. But instead, we would mostly like to stay in these kinds of jobs if these were real jobs, right? That's the logic for almost everybody.
No.
And, yeah, so go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just thinking about, how much, our role in the classroom, and, we're talking about these bottom-up structures of power. I have a lot of knowledge about what undergraduates need in my classroom because I'm the one teaching in it, and I know all 17 of my students' names, and I know which student and I know which student is a member of the military and has to leave to go do reservist work, and which student is taking 18 hours, and I'm really worried about them because that's too much, but they have to because they need to graduate in 3 years. The administration should value this knowledge, so that I think that's one of the ways we include undergraduates in this conversation. And then I think something that's NTFC, GEO, and various the campus faculty association as well has done pretty well is show up when undergraduates say they need support. Solidarity is 90% showing up. And
absolutely.
I think a good example of that has been the very large coalition that has come together around the anti-chief campaign other campaigns of anti-racism on this campus.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say we don't need even more, but it has been good to see, so that is something that in many ways has, at least in this most recent cycle, had a leadership amongst the undergraduate students that had been supported by the faculty and staff as well.
And one of the things that's always puzzled me is how much pushback comes from admin who, it strikes me, would not be harmed by allowing most of these things to happen.
Yes.
There was for many years a notable senior lecturer here named John Griswold, who used to write an anonymous column about what it was like to be an NTT here. But he used to say that at a place as big as what he called Hinterland University, at a place this big, it's so large that individual attention is impossible, and so the structures are all designed to just move people en masse through the system, you know, instructional units, as it were, right through the system on one end, and on the other end to fetishize itself, to the Illinois is a club, Illinois is a giant block I. And it strikes me that what you're talking about, that sort of, that attention, that knowledge, if they really feel like they cannot efficiently use that, then it strikes me as a relatively bad idea to stand in the way of other people efficiently using that.
Yeah.
But one of the things, and I'm often puzzled by some of the choices they make. They settled that GEO contract in 26 hours. What changed, right? Well, obviously the strike forced them to, but it also really dramatically materializes for me that they could have done that bloody months ago.
Sure.
You know, all that needed to happen was the people who were genuinely in charge, the provost, the chancellor, the chairman of the board of trustees, says to Heather Horn and the bargaining team, here is our absolute bottom line, go settle the damn thing. You know, which is eventually what happened.
No,
why do they think it's in their interest to continue to not do that kind of thing? I don't.
Especially when they've seen what's happened. I mean, how many strikes do they
right.
have to see? Why did it go for 2 weeks? Yeah.
No, because earlier y'all asked about the occupation. I think just a few background details on that. We began by occupying the president's office in the Henry administration building. I was with a group of about 10 to 15 other students, including members or other employees, including members of the bargaining team, and Bruce and Patrick from the English, Bruce and Patrick from the English department here, and we began that occupation, and then the next day, when the administration had still refused to make movement, we also began occupying the chancellor's office here, and that occupation was significantly more fraught because the administration blocked those occupiers' access to bathrooms for about a good 18 hours. And one of the reasons that we chose to occupy those spaces was because the leadership of this university was not here. The provost was at a Coursera conference thinking about how we can teach more people online, because speaking of individual attention, the president was away on, I believe, Robin Kaler called, like, scheduled business,
could be a variety of things.
Mm-hmm. So we essentially were required to embarrass the administration into acquiescence to our request that I agree with Dave, they could have settled months ago. One of the arguments that the GEO consistently made during the strike was, we did not want to be on strike.
Yeah,
marching in the snow for 8 hours a day is not fun.
No.
We did it because we felt that was the thing we had to do to secure things, but I agree, it should not have to be that. It should not require a strike for equitable labor and learning conditions on this campus.
And I've had conversations with outgoing provosts since we've had a number
Which
of them.
Which one?
All of them. because the provost, when we settled the NCFC contract, was Ed Fazer. He and I talked after the strike, and we had a very interesting and very candid meeting because he acknowledged that he had screwed up a number of things process-wise, and I told him to give subsequent provosts a lot of notes about that. But one thing we noted, and I will probably talk to the current provost, Congaleras, at some point this year, that the incentive structure is very poor on their side to do anything progressively during bargaining. The incentives are there to do things when crises arise, because that's how much of administrative logic and executive logic actually works, which is someone walks into your office and says, we need to fix this right now, it's a problem, and you look at it and go, you're right, we should fix that right now, it's a problem. But that doesn't happen when half the TA's tentative agreements of a collective bargaining agreement are done and the other half aren't. No one gives you that note. So you don't think of it as a major problem. Now, I have poked into over the years how the reporting up the chain works at our administration, whether that's unusual to other institutions. Apparently it's not very unusual, sadly. And I think that's something we should put a lot of pressure on. I will also note, because GEO had this as well as we did, we often will agree to, say, all-day bargaining sessions over long breaks, because those are long amounts of time. Everyone theoretically is less busy because most of the bargaining teams are not teaching or researching. They do not tend to use those very helpfully. You could have distributed 26 hours of bargaining over 3 8-hour days, maybe, mm-hmm. in, say, a January or December, and probably settled the contract. But that is certainly not how they have tried to use their time, in part, like I said, because I don't think there's much incentive on the people who are using the time to really pay that much attention until someone walks in the door and says, actually, this is in the Chicago Tribune, it's probably going to be in the New York Times tomorrow. Actually, all three Democratic gubernatorial candidates were on campus on the same day. Actually, the president of the American Federation of Teachers will be here on Thursday, which happens to be the day you settled your contract. Those are important things that show up in various circles that you want to keep our name away from, and that's when someone says, it turns out we need to finish this thing. And we may find that frustrating on our side. I guess I understand it, and also think you should fight it on their side. Right?
Yeah.
Because that's part of your job over there.
No. Well, and I also think, too, we're talking about how do we work in non-bargaining years as well as when we must go on strike. Work actions are not limited to strikes.
Right.
There are other types of work actions that are available to us. For example, during the run-up to bargaining, or during the bargaining process, this contract, it lasted a very long time. GEO did things like occupy the union and do an all-night teach-in for our students during finals, and that was something that helped build a lot of solidarity amongst undergrads for our cause. And so thinking about how can the constituencies of NTTs and graduate TAs and our undergrads all come together and build collective power, because as we've said, like, if 500 people show up in someone's office, that is hard for the newspapers and the donors to ignore.
Yeah. I think this is really important for people to understand that ideally in a collective bargaining situation, the union side and the admin, they get together, they're relatively frank about their interests, and they hash something out. And it's not always easy, but both sides do some movement and blah, 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 blah. In this situation, these actions tend to be needed not necessarily to get exactly what the union side wants, but just to get the admin to show up prepared. And this is really hard to explain. I've tried to explain this to a lot of people over the past month and a half, and it's just really difficult for them to get, because the people they hear from is the GEO. The people they hear from on TV is the GEO. So they're evaluating, absent any context, what are the GEO's claims? What is their tone like? What are they doing like this? Really, aren't they just looking for something to be pissed off about? I don't think in my life I've ever looked for something to be pissed off about. Yet somehow, being in the bargaining room and then hearing Robin Kaler on TV or in the newspaper say their interpretation of what happened in the bargaining room, that was enough to make me want to go on strike over and over and over again, even when it wasn't time. So I really want this to be clear to people over and over again. It's a question of just getting people to participate. Just getting the admin side to participate requires a lot of being annoying.
Yeah. And I'll note that even outside of bargaining, one of the bigger, since we're talking about bigger structural things that we do or can do, you know, we have a campus labor coalition that works with basically all of the campus unions in various forms, including some non-union participants like Campus Faculty Association, the Undergrad Grad Student Alliance, and there's a set of undergrad dining hall workers who are looking at their work options at the moment. So we'd like help with that. But also, that body has finagled its way into meetings with the chancellor and president more regularly than it used to. One of the topics that comes up in those meetings is that there's a shared pattern that we can all observe that I don't think our actual administrators observe. Like, I actually don't think they see any problems with the system of bargaining.
They're never here long enough.
Because they're either not here long enough or it doesn't surface to them in the way we would describe it. And I know that it will take quite a long time, but I'm willing to cajole year after year the same people into recognizing that the system you built or allowed to perpetuate that is a bargaining team not showing up with materials or not actually authorized to settle anything, which is actually part of the problem.
I feel sorry for him.
Is, in fact, part of your issue, right? Not to say that you may want it to go along on certain fronts, and in fact, you're legally allowed to let it happen that way, but if you don't do anything on your side, we can't fix that part for you. Now, I can tell you it's a problem over and over again, and I am happy to remind people of their problems. This is not a problem for me. But that side of things very much is a structural issue that was either designed that way or has come to be that way without much attention, right? And it's certainly one that I would happily give them a new plan and tell them run this plan. But since they won't let me do that part, I can just remind them that after every strike, hey, you know what? This didn't have to go this way. Here's how you could have fixed this. No. Maybe just go tell your people.
I also think structurally, too, not only do we need to keep talking to the admin, but we need to keep talking to our colleagues and amongst ourselves. Like, one of the things about a strike is it brings everyone together because we have to. It is a crisis. Like, but one of the things that we've been talking about in the GEO and we plan to start talking about a lot more is how do we do this work sustainably and regularly? How do we stay or, like, how do we maintain this level of organization? How do we keep, like, how do we keep growing, even when we're not faced with the exigence of having to walk off the job? Like, because while we need to continue to be a thorn in the side of the administration, I would very much agree, because unfortunately that is, as Sean pointed out, well, the kind of argument they respond to. We all, like, the size of that thorn is very much determined by how together we are and how successfully we can argue and demonstrate that we all believe these things and you need to too.
Well, and also how successfully we can nurture the relationship so that we have something to, you know, to grow and to fight for. And
No, I would say, like, at least for me, and I've talked to several of my colleagues about this too, the thing that really sets this English department apart from other programs I looked at is the sense of community here. Mm-hmm. This is a place where your colleagues care about each other, and we help each other with our scholarship and in our lives. Like, my truck has moved several of my colleagues. doing things socially together. And, like, that sense of community makes the work that we do, which can be very hard and very isolating as academics, better and easier and, like, more emotionally manageable. Right. Like, so I think this sense of community is something that we need to continue to build on, because it in itself is a very valuable good.
It struck me lately, too, how important it is that come from the bottom up, that sense of community. I mean, that's partly why we started this series.
Exactly why we started.
Right. It was this idea that we just needed to talk to each other about our professional matters slightly more formally than we already do in a very much ad hoc fashion. And for me, the grad students and TAs, whether one is one or the other or both, I have always been a part of that. I feel like, you know, that's part of the community, partly because with the incredibly rapidly shrinking tenure track profession, you know, this is what the profession looks like now, in large part anyway. I shouldn't be so totalizing, but in large part, this is what the profession looks like. And as terrible as it is, it also might be an opportunity to sort of revisit how we think about our relations amongst each other. Well, I think then, with that, we're going to end the podcast now.
Excellent.
We hope that you'll come to our next event, which will be Friday, April 6th, where Mary is going to read from her short fiction. We had initially planned that in March, but the GEO strike had us cancel that. So I want to thank Sean Gilmore and Andy Bowman, and we hope that you'll join us soon.
Yeah. And it's 3 o'clock in the library, room 200.
3 o'clock, Literature and Languages Library.
Excellent.
Can't wait to be there.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.